All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. Now to Libya. And our first guest, Eric Margulies. He's the author of War at the Top of the World and American Raj, Liberation or Domination. His website is ericmargulies.com. And you can read them all, I'm pretty sure, at lewrockwell.com, including his latest, Muammar. He's back! Oh, man. I wanted to hear good news, Eric Margulies, about the revolution in Libya. Things aren't going so well, huh?
No, they're not. And those who called for Gaddafi's head are now having to look again and maybe are even thinking about making up with the mad dog of the Middle East, as Reagan called him.
Who's thinking that? Hillary Clinton?
Hillary Clinton, who always gets an A for hypocrisy, but also President Obama, but much more so the Europeans, because they buy all of Libya's oil. America doesn't. And Libya's oil is very important to Europe. Their European refineries are tuned for the exact high-quality, low-sulfur content of Libyan oil. Italy, France, Germany, Britain are all major buyers. The Italians have been discreet, but the French and the British and, to a lesser degree, the Germans have been calling for Gaddafi's head, and now they're going to have to reassess their position.
They're going to have to, as in, it's over, that's it.
They may have to be forced to eat camel, to use the old Arab expression, and make nice to Gaddafi again, or as I said, go and kiss his sandals, if Gaddafi wins. As of now, it looks like Gaddafi's forces, however inefficient they are, and I've been with the Libyan army, watched them fighting, and they're absolutely hopeless. They couldn't fight their way out of a wet Bedouin tent. Nevertheless, the opposition is even more useless, and there's just a ragtag bunch of people shooting guns. And relentlessly, the Libyan forces are moving in on the stronghold of the opposition, which is Benghazi. Whether they can take Benghazi or not, I don't know. Whether Western special forces are going to come in and start helping them, I believe that's already started. But the West still doesn't really know what to do.
Well, why haven't they just gone ahead and done the no-fly, whatever the hell, a couple of weeks ago when, I mean, they've been talking about it this whole time. They want to intervene. That was their opportunity. Do they not want to intervene?
We do learn from our mistakes to an extent.
What, in Washington, D.C.? Nuh-uh.
Even
mistakes are how you advance your agenda.
Even in the thickest minds and bull in a China shop, Washington, D.C., they're beginning to think about Afghanistan and Iraq, where the U.S. charged in with flags flying and trumpets blaring, filled with moral indignation and Christian crusading righteousness and all this thing. And look where they are now. They're stuck $2 trillion messes. So there was caution about Libya. There's the point of who are we going to put in power? Well, they weren't really sure. Could the U.S. You know, a no-fly zone is really a war. It's a euphemism for war. And that means attacking all the air defense capabilities and attacking ground targets and gradually getting sucked into a little ragtag guerrilla war in Libya, which is the last thing the U.S. needs right now after not only Iraq and Afghanistan, but now that its forces are also involved in Somalia and Yemen and, let's not forget, Djibouti.
Yeah, well, there have been protests in Djibouti, and I think I read that, well, I don't know, you tell me, how many people live in that country? Is it even a country, a little city-state?
It's about 800,000 people. Happy, freedom-loving Djiboutians. It used to be a French colony. There's a large French Foreign Legion base. There are 2,500 legionnaires, and there are 2,500 American troops quietly stationed in Djibouti, controlling the mouth of the Red Sea. You don't read about that much in the American media, but it's part of our ever-growing imperial presence around the world. The sun never sets on the American empire.
Yeah, and it's right there across from basically at the mouth of the Red Sea, across from Yemen. So
that's right.
I guess that's what George Bush calls strategery. Although, can't you just park a boat right there? I mean, it's not like there's another naval power in the world that's trying to challenge our dominance or anything. Why do they even need a base in Djibouti? It's just to be mean to Djiboutians.
Well, you can base lots of supplies there and aircraft. transport aircraft. And Djibouti is now being used to support U.S. operations against Somalia in southern Kenya, and also as a waypoint for a small but growing American president's presence in West Africa, in Mali, Senegal, in the sub-Saharan region.
Hey, can you tell me anything about, recent information about the war in Somalia? Could the Al-Shabaab movement just put down their guns and go protest in Mogadishu and win? It doesn't seem like the government there controls much more than a couple of city blocks, a hotel or two.
That's correct. The government, a bunch of stooges who were put in there by the U.S., and
including one is a bureaucrat from the New York City government, right?
Well, I hope he does a better job in Somalia than our New York City bureaucrats do there. In fact, New York, my hometown, New York, could probably use some Somali advisors. The problem there is that the so-called phony government, a bunch of sock puppets, are supported by what is called a African Union peacekeeping force, which are in fact about 8,000 mercenaries hired from Uganda and Kenya and some other places that are American protectorates to go and keep this government of stooges in power. And it is fighting with occasional Ethiopian incursions to another American ally. So they've managed to stabilize, to use a favorite Washington word, situation. But Al-Shabaab is just fighting there and will keep on fighting. And I think eventually the pro-U.S. government or the U.S. installed government will be driven out.
Yeah. Well, shouldn't go without mentioning that the WikiLeaks cables showed that the Americans have not just supported the Ethiopian invasion, but really insisted upon it Christmas 2006, and that there never was such a thing as Al-Shabaab before that, that they were the resistance that grew up in response to the American-sponsored Ethiopian invasion.
Quite right, yes.
And when I say history will record that, I mean, on this show, no one else is going to ever mention that anywhere, ever. You can read all about Al-Shabaab in the media, and never will they tell you who these people are, where they came from, what Dick Cheney had to do with it.
That's correct. And in fact, the only stable government that Southern Somalia has seen since the death of the former dictator Siad Barre was called the Islamic Courts Union, and it had actually brought some measure of justice and calm and peace to Somalia. However, Dick Cheney heard about it, and he saw the word Islamist on it, which is like saying commie in the 1950s to J. Edgar Hoover, and orders went out to get rid of them, terminate them. So it was overthrown, and with it went the only stability and hope for decent government in Somalia.
Yeah. Well, don't worry, though. Our government's still the champion of the people of Libya at the same time that we're working to back every, no matter how ineffectual, no matter how ridiculous a government is, like the so-called government of Somalia, we'll still do anything but let the people of the country decide.
Well, we've got this mania about Islamists, and we have to strike back every time we heard the word Muslim or Islamist. This has been the result of years of anti-Muslim propaganda in the States, so Muslims have become the biggest hate figure in society.
I don't get it. I mean, what are they afraid of? That they'd somehow turn the country into Saudi Arabia? Then they'd be the perfect puppet dictatorship, right?
Well, you've got uneducated people across the states who believe claptrap about the Muslim caliphates, and they're all going to make us pray to Mecca, and et cetera, et cetera. There are really a lot of Americans who believe that. But there are a lot of Americans who can't find Canada or Mexico on the map, too. So you have to understand that. But, we're still raising a hue and cry about the poor, suffering Libyan people who are revolting and want their freedom and demand. Demanding the overthrow of Gaddafi. Hillary Clinton meeting yesterday with representatives from the Libyan rebels. Meanwhile, off in Bahrain, we are plauding the arrival of 1,000 troops from the Gulf Cooperation Council, most of whom are Saudis, to put down the revolution of the people who want democracy there.
Yeah, well, and it gets worse. When we get back, we'll talk about the AFPAC war, a little bit about the Saudi monarchy crushing of the protest movement in Bahrain, and more with Eric Margolis, author of American Raj, ericmargolis.com. We'll be right back. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. On the line is Eric Margulies. We're talking about the revolutions in the Middle East. And, you know, before we move on to Bahrain, I guess I want to ask you again something about Libya here, Eric. We were talking about how it really looks like Gaddafi's coming out ahead in this war, as maybe should have been expected or something, I don't know. But so I wonder what you think Libya's going to look like after, because, you know, certainly he's got bigger problems than he used to.
Well, you know, the Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan, a man who is really admirable, one of the best minds in that whole part of the world, and has done wonders for moving Turkey into the 21st century, came out with the best solution, a proposal. He said that Gaddafi should step back from politics. He can stay on as a leader in his tent and everything else with guarantees of his life, but he should appoint a prime minister with full powers to manage Libya and deal with Libya's problems. In other words, he would become more of a figurehead, which he claims to be anyway, since he holds no official office. That's one thing. Otherwise, he'll either go back to being the Gaddafi we love to hate, and then put his son Saif with Islam in power, who's not a dope by any means, somebody will come and shoot him, and then probably there's a general called General Yunus who's with the rebels in Benghazi, and he is certainly a strong candidate to take over. But whatever happens, it doesn't matter, because Libya will still go on selling its oil when the dust settles. And, you know, all this uproar about Libya is totally hypocritical. The next person who's concerned about Libyan democracy and people you talk to, ask them to name three Libyan cities. Or two Libyan tribes, and they will be dumbfounded.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to see universal rights locally enforced everywhere in the world. I just don't want America to help. That's all, because America doesn't help when it comes to things like that. I think that's pretty clear.
Speaking as a U.S. military veteran, what I would like to see, and I'm proud to see, is I like to see the U.S. Navy, the Seventh Fleet, going to help Japan in the current horrible crisis that it's going through, rather than going and bombing small countries.
Well, I'm even opposed to that, because then that's the first talking point for the imperialists, is that it's all for the good of the world. All we ever do is help people when a tidal wave hits them, when really that's not the purpose of the Imperial Navy at all. Just makes for great PR.
It does indeed.
All right. Well, but anyway, so I don't know if you saw, Justin Raimondo had a piece called There's No Such Thing as Libya Anyway, or something like that, about how this is all post-World War II, the legacy of Benito Mussolini's fascism there in North Africa, where these two or three separate city-states that had existed since time immemorial were forced together under this king, under the, you know, somewhat under the rule of the Western powers at the end of the war.
Well, Justin must have been reading my columns again. He often does that. Just kidding. Libya is a recently created state by the imperial powers, and it never was a state until 1951, when three regions, Tripolitania, Cyrenaica, and the Fezzan, which is essentially desert, were kind of merged together to create an oil state, much like as Iraq was created, this artificial monstrosity, to encompass oil wells in different ends of the country. So first, the Italians took Libya, that region, from the Turks and the Ottoman Turks. And the Italians brutally ruled Libya. They were the first people to set up concentration camps in the 1920s and 30s there, and they used poison gas against the tribes who were fighting back. Very brutal. Then the British ousted the Italians in the North African campaign and ruled after the war and put their puppet King Idris on the throne until he was ousted by Gaddafi, it is said, with backing from the U.S. to get rid of a British puppet so they could put their own American puppet in Libya. But he wasn't such a good puppet after all.
Well, so do you think that the legacy of that could mean possibly that the East could just secede from Tripoli's control?
It could break up, but this is a threat that hangs over much of the Arab world, which was created with artificial borders by the imperial powers, and it is fragile. Not Egypt, that has complete integrity, maybe not Saudi Arabia, but certainly some of the other countries are fragile. The Economist once put it brilliantly. They called the whole Arab world tribes with flags. And it threatens at any given time to revert to its basic tribalism.
Mm-hmm. Now, Charles Featherstone was on the show, another LRC writer, yesterday, and he said he was hearing that there was a quid pro quo going on, and that in order to get the Arab League to, you know, pretend to independently call for American intervention in Libya, that the Obama administration made a deal with the Saudis to go ahead and approve their invading Bahrain in order to help King Hamad put down the revolution there. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I haven't been privy to the power there. I think what happened was the usually do-nothing Arab League roused itself to call for a no-fly zone or war, really, against Libya. However,
that wasn't just Hillary Clinton called them and said, hey, we need you to pretend to be the pressure from below on this one?
I don't think so, but I can't prove it. It's just my gut feeling. But what they did was they said, well, provided that the UN Security Council gives approval, knowing very well that it was unlikely that the Security Council would approve it. So they were off the hook from American pressure. I'm sure there was a good deal of American pressure to do that, and particularly on Egypt, which still remains two-thirds under the thumb of the United States. And meanwhile, there's American green light to the Saudis to go and send their army of Bedouin units, militia units, into Bahrain.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of which, maybe we can end up just the last minute here. So can you give us a word or two about Bahrain and maybe Yemen if we can squeeze it in?
Yemen is of great worry to the Saudis because there are millions of Yemenis in Saudi Arabia as workers. There may even be more Yemenis than Saudis there, and they're very militant, and it worries the hell out of them. Bahrain worries the Saudis because it's a thorn in their side. It's a Shiite thorn in their side. The eastern cities of Saudi Arabia are predominantly Sunni. There's been trouble going on there for as long as I can remember, and they're afraid that what's happened in Bahrain could spark an uprising in Saudi Arabia. The behind all that is how angry are the Iranians going to get? So, which, by the way, Iran says that Bahrain is historically part of Iran. And the Saudis are now almost daring Iran to do something. So it's dangerous. I hope cool heads prevail in Tehran, but you never know. This situation could get out of control and flare up into an actual shooting war between Iran and the Saudis, which immediately would drag in the United States.
Boy, I think that's what George Washington meant about entangling alliances and stuff.
And President Eisenhower's cautions, and well, yes, and we're caught in an entanglement that we don't really understand, and we should start asking ourselves why we're there to begin with.
Yeah, well, I don't know about starting, but yeah, I guess that's really true for most people. Maybe now is the time to begin to ask whether this is all productive.
Scott, it's not for oil. The U.S. is the world's largest oil producer. Or it has the largest oil reserves in the world still.
Oh, that's an interesting point. We'll have to pick that one up sometime.
Yeah, okay.
I appreciate that. All right, everybody, it's Eric Margulies, ericmargulies.com. Thanks very much.
Cheerio.